COVID-19 pandemic has required a government response that is bigger and more extreme than anything in Australia's history. The changes to our way of life, banning gatherings, hundreds of billions dollars spent in stimulus, restrictions on our movements would have been unthinkable just a couple of months ago. The ABC's Four Corners has been charting the government's response to this crisis, speaking to the central players to some of these historic changes as the magnitude of this pandemic became apparent.
There would be a significant negative effect on the economy early on, but that it would be comparatively manageable. But as the situation evolved rapidly, it became very clear that this was going to be quite devastating and that we needed to seriously ramp up our response.
That's the Finance Minister Matthias Cormann telling Insider's host David Spears as part of this Four Corners that the government sort of became, you know, the realisation that this pandemic was much bigger than they thought initially. David Spears, welcome back to Breakfast.
Hi, Fran.
In more ways than one, welcome back. So, David, when did you start working alongside, or not working alongside, but, you know, tracking the government's response to this? How long have you been following the government sort of machinations here?
Yeah, we started this about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So it was really when coronavirus had arrived in Australia, but it was really starting to pick up and the government was turning its mind to how to protect the economy. And that's what we've really been tracking with this story, is the economic response, not so much the health response. The two, of course, are very much tied, as you know, Fran. You do one thing to save the health of people and it costs the economy. So every decision that they've taken, they've had to think very hard about the economic consequence. So We've tracked it since that first stimulus package, you might remember, was a little under $18 billion. It was less than 1% of GDP. And it became clear pretty quickly they'd have to do a whole lot more in a series of announcements. And so we really tried to get on the inside of what they were thinking, what the various players who were influential in each step were thinking as well through this process, really until that extraordinary moment of the JobKeeper package, the $130 billion package, that I think was the moment when we really started to see some relief at last for businesses, for workers as well, who were so anxious for so long through this.
So what sort of insight did you get in terms of when the government or the key ministers in government sort of got it? Is that a sense you got, that there was a light bulb moment?
There was. I think a lot of it was around that day when, I think it was the 23rd of March, a Monday, when the Centrelink queues emerged. This was the day that the pubs and clubs and cafes and restaurants and so on were all told to close their doors. And immediately you saw those long queues outside Centrelink offices. And that really hit like a lightning bolt for so many, including the senior players in the government. And they realised they would have to go a whole lot further. They'd been resisting certainly the UK model of a wage subsidy, you might remember, until then. But, they started to get pressure from the ACTU. And Sally McManus tells us about her role in this, from business leaders as well. And Josh Frydenberg names some of them, including Solomon Liu, who just burst into tears on the phone to him, explaining how he'd had to lay off 9,000 people. So they realised it really was Frydenberg and Morrison who drove this. Initially, when they decided to go with a wage subsidy, the Treasurer tells us he asked Treasury to come up with some figures. And the first, the suggestion they came back with was actually a few hundred dollars short of the $1,500 they ended up with. So, I guess around $1,200. And he said to them, we've really got to break glass here and go for something bigger. We need the psychological boost right now. And so it was really Frydenberg who drove that extra few hundred dollars, I suppose that extra 20% to the price tag of this.
You've spoken to the two of the premiers, Daniel Andrews and Gladys Berejiklian, about this. There was a moment there when they seemed to be moving ahead of the government. Have you got a sense of the dynamic within the National Cabinet, that Cabinet of State and Federal leaders, about who's driving the agenda?
Yeah, there are a couple of really important days, I think, for the National Cabinet. One, no more so than the 22nd of March, it was that Sunday when there was a lot of pressure on the states to shut down more businesses, schools and so on. They had a national cabinet meeting that had been brought forward to that night. And yet in the afternoon, it was actually during a press conference from the Prime Minister to announce the second big stimulus package. As he was on his feet, the premiers, Gladys Berejiklian and Dan Andrews, issued statements saying they were going to shut down non-essential business. This was before the national cabinet met that night. So there was confusion about which business was that, who's meant to go to work tomorrow, who's not. It was a pretty wild day in many ways. So we talked to those two premiers about that. Look, they both agree. They felt they needed to jolt the system and jolt the nation, that they needed to be. They won't go so far as saying the National Cabinet wasn't working, but you get the impression that they were unsatisfied as to where it was heading, and they needed to get out publicly and deliver that jolt to get things moving and get to the point they did.
And just finally, I think one very rare voice we're going to hear tonight is from the Reserve Bank Governor, Philip Lowe. He doesn't usually do interviews. He told you this crisis is forcing him to do things he never would have imagined. Is he worried about the country's ability to recover from the economic cost of this virus?
I wouldn't say he's worried. And look, it was fascinating to talk to him because, as you say, he doesn't do interviews. But, you know, we did this one with him last week, and there he was working alone on the 12th floor of the Reserve Bank headquarters in Sydney, or, you know, others in the building, yes. But he, I think, almost welcomed a bit of social interaction when we arrived. But look, he's not worried about the debt. He tells us, even though, you know, we're now several hundred billion dollars so far in the spending involved here, that we shouldn't be worried about the debt. He says, you know, this is something that we can afford to do because of years of sound fiscal management. He says we shouldn't be worried. It's the right thing to do. We have the capacity to borrow. In fact, an interesting line, he says, there's never been a better time to borrow given where interest rates are. But he does also say we will have to confront that debt at some point. Right. It will constrain our choices in the future. So I guess a bit of a message there to both sides of politics. They can't just rely on growing our way out of this. At some point, there will have to be some difficult decisions involved.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it, this kind of bird's eye view of how we're rolling out this response to the pandemic. David, thanks very much.
Thanks, Fran.